From the National Endowment for the Arts, this is Artworks. I'm Josephine Reed. We're concluding our celebration of Native American Heritage Month by posting a conversation I recently had with 2022 National Heritage Fellow, Diné textile artist and weaver, Tanaba Natani. Born in New Mexico, Tanaba is a dedicated artist and fierce advocate for traditional Navajo or Diné weaving. Yet she's also willing to expand them by changing patterns and shapes or weaving different textiles into her work. Because of this, her weaving has deeply impacted both traditional and contemporary textile arts. Living in her ancestral homeland of Table Mesa, Tanaba embraces holistic Diné weaving practices. This is not just an art form, it's a way of life that involves raising and herding the sheep, harvesting and dyeing the wool, then carding, spinning, before she even begins to weave it on a loom. Tanaba's textile art has been recognized in museums and galleries across the country and around the world. She's also a celebrated interpreter of Diné weaving traditions, working with museums and cultural centers to tell the story and process of this remarkable art. I was lucky enough to speak with Tanaba Natani last month. Here's our conversation. Well, Tanaba, I have to begin by congratulating you on being named a 2022 National Heritage Fellow. Bravo.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be recognized for the work I've been doing. As time goes, I am learning the magnitude of it.
Well, let's go back and tell us a little bit about where you were born and where you were raised.
I was born on the Navajo Nation in the northern area, the northern agency of the Navajo Nation near the Four Corners area where the four states meet. I was born in Shiprock, New Mexico. My father, Leo Natani, his job took us to Fort Defiance, Arizona. My father was a carpenter and a director of a housing program there. And Fort Defiance at that time was a small town. There was still a lot of traditional people that lived on the outskirts.
Were you raised with traditional ways?
Yes, I was. Even though it was in the late 60s, early 70s, my mom and my dad were somewhat products of the boarding school system that the government placed upon our people. And even though my dad went to boarding school and my mom also was sent away to school, they still held on very strongly to their traditional upbringing, their traditional ways.
And I know your parents moved you back to your ancestral lands. How old were you and what prompted them to do that?
Yeah. So I went to school in Fort Defiance, my elementary years, and my grandmother, Mary Lee Henderson, I remember she would visit us on weekends, though it seems like there was frequent visits from my grandmother. And I believe what my grandmother, her visits were primarily to tell my mom and encourage my mom to move back to the ancestral lands. My grandmother was getting older, and I believe that my grandmother was seeing changes in her community, seeing a lot of development in the community. And I think that she was concerned that the lands where we're originally from possibly might be used for development of some sort. So she encouraged my mom to make the move back and start raising the sheep. And that's what happened. So about 9 years old, we moved back here to Table Mesa.
What's your earliest memory of weaving? Is it when you moved back to the ancestral home, or was it still when you were in Fort Defiance?
My earliest memory is when the actual weaving was living in Fort Defiance. I think I was in the second grade. My routine was I come home and get into my play clothes and play until maybe a couple of hours till dinner time. But one day I came home and my mom had a small loom set up for me. And she told me, today you're going to learn how to weave. She says, you're going to learn how to weave. And after you start weaving, then you can go out and play with your friends when you come back from school. That was where I sat down. My fingers touched the warp and my hands held the comb. My hands opened up the shed with the batten. Those are my earliest memories of weaving. Prior to that, we had frequent visits to my paternal grandmother's home. And I vaguely remember my paternal grandmother carding wool, working with wool. And I was started handling that wool. And that's when my paternal grandmother gave me my Navajo name. I was about 5 years old at that time. And she gave me my full Navajo name of Tanaba Aklohugi. Tanaba Aklohugi means coming into battle with your weaving. And then maybe 2 years after that, and maybe a year after that, that's when I started weaving. That's when my first loom was brought before me.
Was weaving something that you loved from the beginning, or was it something that you learned to love?
At 7 years old, I was more interested in watching cartoons and playing with my best friend, Marcinda. I was more interested in that. So at 7 years old, I didn't really want to learn how to weave. I was resistant to it a little. And then when we moved to Table Mesa, to my current home now, then, of course, I was older. I was about 10 years old, 11 years old. And I started weaving more frequently. And we were not living in the town anymore. So I couldn't just ride my bike down to the school or down to the store. The school is 15 miles from here. So we come into the desert at 10 years old. And my mother set up another loom for me and she started showing me more. I started designing my weavings. And that there at age maybe 10 or 11, I believe I begin to feel that spiritual connection of the weaving. It was speaking to me and it became enjoyable and it wasn't a chore to me. I wasn't resistant anymore. As a matter of fact, I had three older brothers. You know, living on a ranch, there's a lot of chores you have to do. We had sheep, we had to herd sheep, and we had horses, and we had no running water. We had to bring the water into the house with a bucket. So when the chores were given out, my job was to go work, to go do my weaving. And I did not mind that. That was my fun space, my fun time. I don't think I realized that what was happening. I didn't realize that the spiritual connection of the Navajo weaving, the magnitude of it, what it was doing to me. And when I was about 13 years old, when I became a young woman, I had a sacred ceremony to celebrate that. In that ceremony, weaving songs were sung for me, and my weaving tools were in there also in my ceremony. So that particular ceremony is, I believe, is kind of the forefront also of of me talking about the weaver, how weaving stayed in my life, the spirit of the weaving.
You made the decision to join the military. How old were you, and what made you take that decision?
Well, I was very young. I was just 17, 18 years old. I had just turned 18 years old, and I also graduated at that time. I wasn't interested in college. I know I didn't want to go to college. And what I wanted to do was to weave about 10 weavings and sell them and buy a Harley Davidson and go to Rocky Boy, Montana. Of course, at 18, you have no knowledge of maturity. And my father, I often think of it as laying down the law to me. He made it very clear to me that I needed to get a job and I needed to start providing for my own self, you know. And he told me, you like to travel. I know you want to travel. You like to travel. You should perhaps the military. The Navy's the one I think you would go traveling if you want to travel, he said. And right away I thought about it and I just thought about the Caribbean. I don't know. I just thought about a blue ocean, a turquoise shore, and palm trees. That's what I thought about. And then I thought the Navy would be the one to get me there. And I joined the military then.
And you remained in the military for 5 years? Is that correct?
Actually, about 15 years. I did.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I did 4 years of active duty where I was stationed on a ship. And then after my active duty time, I stayed connected with the military as a reservist, as a naval reservist. And yeah, so that's where my other years comes in, my 11 years of reserve duty.
But I know you didn't weave for 5 years, but you were really drawn to it in various markets as you traveled throughout the world. And you've spoken about a really important moment in the Philippines. And I'd like you to share that if you don't mind.
Yeah, I was stationed on a ship. And our living quarters are very small. You have like a 2 feet by 6 feet rack that's your sleeping area. And underneath that rack is where you store your clothes. And you might be lucky to have a small locker. So, you know, my weaving, it did stop for a moment. And so when I was in the military, of course, I was meeting many people from different nations. And then we went on a Western Pacific cruise for 6 months. And we went to the Philippines to a port called Subic Bay, and the town is called Olongapo. And our ship stayed there for about a month and a half. And I grew lonely. I could feel the distance. And I always remember my father, my late father, telling me, no matter where you are, every day the holy people, they cross the universe and they see you, they recognize you. And I was so lonely. And on a Saturday, I went out to the market and I was, you know, walking about just looking at products. And then I seen these ladies selling woven items made out of palm leaves. And they were like purses, coin purses, hats, placemats, a lot of those woven goods. And then all of a sudden, I just started touching all of them. And they couldn't speak English. And of course, I can't speak Tagalog. That's the name of one of their dialects. And I couldn't speak that, but I touch every weaving. And it was so comforting to me. And I tell them, I'm a weaver. I know about this. I'm a weaver too.
When you left the military and you eventually ended up going to school in Santa Fe for environmental management. You were weaving during this time, but when you were done with school, you decided you were going to weave full time. Can you talk about that decision?
Right. While in Santa Fe, halfway through my schooling, I begin to weave again. I begin to have the interest to learn more about hand spinning. I learn how to card wool. I learn how to spin. And it was like side by side. And the more I got into hand spinning and dyeing wool, by the time I finished my school, I was afraid because I knew deeply that it's possible I might not work in my field of study, what I've been studying to be, because the weaving was too great, was too strong, was talking to me, was just living within me more and more. And when I graduated and I was working part-time for the State Environment Department, and my weaving was talking to me, and I couldn't ignore it. And then right around that time, also, my mom and my dad, they retired from ranching. They said, "You kids, we're handing over the ranching duties to you." And I took that as a message to come back home. And I missed home also. However, I know I was taking a risk, because coming back to over here, there's really no jobs. But I took that risk. I took that risk, and I'm glad I did. I trusted that. And this is my destiny. It is my destiny what I'm doing. I'm weaving full time, and I'm living as close as I can as being a traditional Diné woman, a traditional Navajo woman.
You do this holistically. You're raising the sheep, you're shearing the sheep, you're dyeing the wool, you're carding it, you're weaving it. Can you tell me a little bit about the dynamic of that whole process?
Yes, for me, being a rancher, because I've gone to college and I've studied some about the environment, about how delicate our desert is now, and I can understand climate change. My responsibility is not only taking care of the sheep in the very best way I can, but also taking care of the land. So living holistically with the land and having sheep means also that you have to be aware of what's available out in the desert, the forage, the availability of water. And it helps you to not be greedy. It helps you to be humble, to be able to understand that it's okay to reduce your flock. It's okay to do that. And we have to do that now more than ever. Also with the sheep, they help you become strong. You become strong because you have to shear them in the springtime. Sometimes you shear them twice a year because the kind of sheep I have, their fleece can grow up to a foot, can grow 12 inches. It's hard work. It's not easy work, but it's rewarding. For me, I'm very lucky that my late father comes from another community. I live in Senoste community. That's where my mom is from. Right next to our community is Tualina, and that's where my dad was from. And that's where, in the summertime, for the past 40 years, that's where we would take the sheep up to the mountains for the summer. And now, I don't believe a lot of people have that luxury. So we follow that cycle. When the summer comes, it's too hot here in the summer. So we'll shear the sheep in April or May. And then between the end of May, the middle of June, we'll head up to the mountains and stay in the mountains for about 2 to 3 months. And then we'll come back down maybe September, maybe August. It really is dependent upon the weather.
What is it about Dene weaving that's distinctive? How is it distinctive?
Our weaving was created for us. The whole construction of the loom was created by the Spider-Man and Spider-Woman deities and the other holy deities. They used part of the universe to construct the loom. And when they did that, they created songs. So a Navajo loom has a lot of spiritual, universal relation. The warp represents rain, and it represents our life. And the tension cord represents lightning. The top of the loom represents the sky, our father sky, and the bottom represents our mother earth. The corners of the loom represent our mountains. The weaving comb represents white shell. So there's songs that were made when these items were created. And that's why this way of work, this skill is very spiritual. This skill is very sacred. This weaving has a heartbeat, and you have to give it respect.
Can we talk a bit about the way your weaving has evolved over the years?
Yeah, I used to weave regional patterns. The Navajo twill weavings is a pattern that's developed by a sequence of numbers and of pulling so many warps forward and pulling so many warps back to create diamonds, to create double weave, to create zigzags. But as I started back into my weaving, I was mature, and you know, my return back home after college and to decide I'm going to do weaving full time, my relationship to my weaving became very special. And in the beginning, I used to want everything so perfect. And sometimes the weaving, it wants to go in on the sides, and you want to pull those out. And the more I tried to correct it to make it perfect, it seems like the more the spirit of the weaving showed me that it didn't want to be that. And what my experience told me is the weaving has a heartbeat. And I don't do all this alone. I'm in partnership with this work. So I have to respect that. And because of that, that surrender, that acknowledgement on my part, I'm able to receive a tremendous blessing from it and create in patterns that aren't regional styles that help also to inspire my fellow community, my fellow weavers across the whole Navajo Nation to see and get inspired and say, wow, I can do something like that. And to be very expressive, there's a powerful energy with it. It feeds you.
And Tanaba, you're also bringing your own creative process to it. I mean, you're open to the magic and spirituality of it, but you meet it with your own creativity. You incorporate other fibers into your work, for example. So I'm curious about that creative process and how ideas come to you.
Yeah, a lot of my ideas, they come in different forms. Sometimes they come in dreams. Sometimes I see patterns in nature. Or sometimes I see like a hand-felted art piece that I want to create, a weaving that has a movement like that, or the landscape. I'll have weavings where a customer wants a certain weaving, and I've gone to their home and I've looked at their artwork and taken photographs and come home and look at those photographs now and then. And then when it feels right, I'll start sketching something. And so taking time and allowing those designs to come. I'm very curious also about how different fibers work, how they behave, how they weave. I didn't realize, but every fiber creates a different sheen, creates a different texture. And now I'm fascinated about texture. And you don't see that in weaving, Navajo weaving, but I'm very secure to still weave Navajo style and put texture in it. I've developed that security over the years because that's part of the creativity.
I think you might have answered this because my next question was, you're a weaver and you're also an advocate and you're building cultural knowledge both in your community and in the wider world. And I'd like you to talk about how and why you began this work, and you're really devoted to this.
Yes, I'm devoted to it. There's different reasons, you know, and one of a very special reason I do it is the balance that it brings me. There's a beautiful spirituality with it. There's a medicine with it that helps me to be strong, to not be bored, to be able to get into a zone, a creative space. So weaving is kind of like my prayer. I need my weaving and this way of life of being a rancher, of having to go out every morning and breathe that cold air to throw some hay for my sheep, or having to go to the water hole. We're living in such a changing time right now, and our culture, our way of life is in danger. And it's my hope that my community see how I'm raising sheep and see that there is a way to do it holistically to help heal the land, because the land goes hand in hand with our culture, with our traditional beliefs.
You've been a mentor to a number of apprentices, and I wonder what you try to impart to them. Clearly, healing the land is being part of the process, but how do you approach your work with mentees?
When I have an apprentice and I'm a mentor to them, I become their student as well. I don't think that I'm the only one teaching them. I'm open to learn from them too. And that's one of the first things I tell them is I like to enhance what you know and help you to blossom it. And I'm also here to learn from you. And I try to share with them the love I experience with my work, the excitement, the exuberance, the magic. The magic is in washing the wool, in carding the wool, in spinning the wool, in weaving, in herding the sheep, in shearing the sheep, in feeding the sheep. There's many different aspects of feeling the richness of this way of life.
You've participated in quite a few cultural exchange programs, and I wonder if there was any one that was particularly memorable to you.
Yeah, I think the one that was memorable for me is when we did a three-generation cultural exchange to Vientiane. We went to Laos, and it was my mother, myself, and my daughter, and we went to the villages to see their weaving, and then we took our weaving too, and we gave them workshops to let them see how we weave. That they spun cotton, which is a short fiber, and they spun it so easy. They're just like so professionals using whatever they had on hand. They created a little spindle mechanism with a tire rim, and we took our Navajo spindle. And I think the amazement between the two cultures, the amazement is what was neat to see. Even though we live miles, oceans apart, and different languages, different cultures, but we have a common language, and that's fiber and weaving and spinning. That's our language. And I think that's a universal language. And whether I go to Africa, South America, Croatia, if we get fiber people together, we all know that language. And that is an honor. That is an honor.
And I think that is a great place to leave it. Tanaba, so many congratulations. And thank you for giving me your time.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad we were able to do this. And interviews like this, it helps me too. It's also medicine for me to hear myself and the love I have.
It's lovely to hear too. That was 2022 National Heritage Fellow, Diné textile artist and weaver, Tanaba Natani. Please look at some of her work online at arts.gov, where you can also see a short video about Tanaba, her work, and her way of life. And while you're on arts.gov, check out the documentary, Roots of American Culture, a film about Tanaba and all of the 2022 National Heritage Fellows. You won't want to miss it. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd love to know your thoughts. Please email us at artworkspod@arts.gov and follow us on Apple Podcasts. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Josephine Reed. Thanks for listening.